You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Gilby.
And welcome to Fanboy Versus. I'm your host, JD. With us this week, we have not quite a full roster, but we're those of us that are here are awesome, so don't be afraid. We've got McFeely, we've got Triplett, and we have got the much-anticipated Melissa with us. Hey, Melissa, how's it going?
Hey, JD, how's it going?
Yes. We're very excited to have you here. We've sort of teased that you were coming to the show for a couple of weeks, but now you're with us and you're ready to talk comics. Excellent.
Yes.
So, this week it is Fanboy Versus the Digital World, as we'll talk about some upcoming events or some things that have been released as far as digital comics. So we'll just jump right into the news segment. The first big news that came out earlier this week was, of course, Digital Downloads, a digital comic reader app for iPad and iPhone, as well as for the PSP and the PS3, I believe, even, for DC Comics. So, two very interesting things about this. One is that the pricing actually seems reasonable. Two, they have several, it looks like, free issues that are available on this, one of them being the new Superman 700, which we will be talking about later on this show.
It's just part of 700, right? It's not like the whole thing?
It may be part, but I thought it was all. See, the thing about the 700 is it's kind of broken up, so there's a couple of different mini stories going on. So that I'm not sure of. But excellent question. Way to make me look like I don't know what I'm talking about.
Sorry.
Because I don't. The other amazing part of this is that DC is actually testing putting new issues of comics up. Now, if you are familiar with the discussions that we've had on this show, as well as the digital comics available from Marvel, if you're reading Marvel digital comics for download, hopefully you're not interested in reading anything more recent than 2006, because that's about as new as you can get. Now, DC, on the other hand, you can get new issues of one of my favorite comic series right now, which is Generation Lost, Justice League Generation Lost. They put issue 4 out this week. So you can get issues 1, 2, and 3 for $1.99, which I think is a pretty good deal, and then $2.99, which should be cover price for that issue. So guys, what do you... is this groundbreaking, revolutionary, or, what?
Well, day and date sounds like it is, because I'm really shocked that came out around the same time as the actual physical issue. That's unusual. I'm really shocked, actually.
Yeah, it's same day. Absolute same day. So this Wednesday, you'll be able to get, I guess it's not this Wednesday. Generation Lost is bi-weekly right now. So it'll be
like the 2 weeks.
It'll be two weeks. But DC...
See, I would think like the new issue, when the new issue came out, like you'd get like the last issue is what I would think for digital, but I guess not. I guess they're trying something different.
Just see if it works, of course. I mean, it... I don't know about... I'm not bothered about digital comics at all. I don't do it. I won't do it. Not because of any moral reason or anything like that, or even... not even because of my job, but because I don't want to read it on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something about actually having the book in your hands and flipping through the pages. You know, it's a little bit of a different experience than sitting there reading it on the computer screen or whatever.
But do you think that devices like the iPad change that a little bit? Isn't part of what that is trying to do to bring more of that on-the-page feel to a digital format? And what about, reading comics?
Well, that's certainly
that?
What they keep telling us. Whether or not it actually will, we'll have to see.
Well, Brian says it looks fancy.
I don't feel compelled to own one or to read comics on it or whatever. See, I mean, I just wonder about the mentalities behind it, you know? I mean, if you've been... if you're the kind of person who actively goes to your comic shop every week to pick up the new weekly or bi-weekly title or whatever, are you the sort of person who then will just... I don't think that person will throw their hands up and say, no, forget it, I'll go digital instead.
No. Yeah, and I think that's... Well, and I think that's part of the reasoning, I think, is that those of us who you know, love and buy and buy and appreciate, you know, the paper comic, I don't think it's going to motivate us to do that. However, I think it will be a draw for those who maybe, you know, don't have a comic book store near them or don't want to go to a comic book store, who want to maybe...
Well, I feel that I always do whenever I grumble about online and digital things. I do tend to overlook people who can't go to a comic shop locally. Yeah, so I suppose there is that.
Yeah, I'm like an hour away from my shop. It's basically I have to choose a day when I'm in the area where my comic shop is and justify going. I just can't just go to the comic shop just because I want to.
Yeah, I mean, you think about a large portion of the country is rural, and with the internet connection, you know, internet becoming more broadly available, in particular, you know, something like what the iPad does, which brings that, you know, the possibility of being connected all the time, as well as being connected through Wi-Fi, which even if you're in a rural area, you may still be able to have a decent internet connection. You're going to be able to read comics now, read comics same day, not have to wait, you know. Like I said, like for me, like when I was a teenager growing up, there was no comic book store in the town that I grew up in, which was a pretty small town, and that I've mentioned on this show, actually. And, yeah, I would have had to have tried to, and I did, I had to try to con a trip, you know, to Oklahoma City out of my folks in order to get any kind of decent comics, whereas with this, you know, I could have conceivably still read comics that were fairly current. So I don't know. I think we've talked about this on the show before. We're going to talk about it again because ultimately digital for any of these formats I think is the future. It's just a question of how do you present that in a way that gets people the medium, gets people excited about it, but doesn't kill the print medium.
I think I would only use it for like if I like maybe miss an issue, like say like my comic shop didn't order enough of a book, like a Shield, like Marvel's Shield right now. They never order enough copies of that, and I've not got a single issue of it yet. And I'd love to read it, but Marvel's not putting new stuff up. But maybe if they put it up digitally, I might read it. Like that. Yeah, but I would still rather have the physical issue. But if I had that option where it's sold out at the comic shop, can't find a copy locally. Well, hey, maybe I just want to download it just because I just want to read it. It'd be a nice option.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's like a lot of stuff that, you know, looks like that's on this DC. I think the Green Lantern Rebirth is available on there. So, you know.
But then I question whether or not, not you specifically, Triplett, but, I mean, you have the internet laid bare in front of you. You want to read a comic. Do you go and do you pay the $3, the $4 for the comic, or do you just get the same thing for free by downloading it, torrenting it from somewhere, you know?
Well, I mean, obviously, most people are definitely downloading it for free, but I'm just saying, like, you know, if I have a quick and easy way to find it, and it's not too expensive, and my local shop doesn't have it, it'd just be kind of nice to just have it for download and just read it right then and there.
Well, and I think, too...
Accessibility is just the thing. Because, like, you know, you could torrent your stuff, but then again, if they've got it in a shop and you know exactly where it is, you know, the day that they're going to put it up, I mean, you know exactly where to go to get it.
Well,
it's the differing mentalities of people. I think, you know, you've got the genuinely dedicated fans who love comics and are happy to spend their wages on them. And then you have the bitter, self-entitled nerd who really reads comics to complain about them, who are the people who won't be spending the money on it. Now, I think the latter group is a higher percentage when it comes to the internet.
Well, but again, these are for peripherals. I mean, like, so Melissa, like, you know, to kind of ask a question to you.
Okay.
You're at least familiar with iTunes, correct?
Oh, yeah.
So that versus maybe trying to... So let's say that you wanted to read Green Lantern Rebirth, right, which is something mm-hmm. that, you know, we talked about. Are you prone to maybe try to find that through iTunes, and would you feel more comfortable doing that or trying to find a torrent to download? If you couldn't find it in your shop, you know what I mean?
Right, right. Well, probably mostly because I'm not, you know, I don't use the torrent stuff a whole lot, because I'm not really a tech person. I'm like, I know how to use iTunes, so more likely I would probably go through that.
And then wouldn't you be more likely again to maybe just go and buy it off Amazon?
Possibly.
I mean, that's just yeah. that particular example involves a graphic novel rather than something that's currently coming out with new installments month on month. I mean, if you're talking about a complete package, it's kind of a different thing to a month on month. I mean, does anybody offer digital graphic novels like a complete? I mean, yeah, you can buy like a complete. You could buy the complete contents of a graphic novel, maybe. But I mean, they don't. Or does anything? That's a genuine question. Does anything offer it like in a pack presented as a graphic novel? Does anything do that?
I think the Marvel and DC stuff does it issue by issue, don't they? I mean, like, if you wanted to get Rebirth, you probably have to buy like issue 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 separate.
Possibly, but I don't know. I mean, that's been the hallmark of some of the, you know, some of those digitals, is that you can do those as a package. So I don't know. And apparently we don't. Yeah. Had I thought about it, I would have, you know, grabbed my PSP and checked it out before the show. But since we don't put that much thought into what we do here.
Hey, I've just got the free ones right now. I haven't bought any on my PSP.
So, which is all that I have as well. So apparently I'm cheap.
And
as
of course, as a retailer, I'm automatically approaching this from a position of hostility. So I'm not the best person to pass comment on it anyway.
But in a sense, you are too. I mean, because you're going to bring that unique perspective, you know, to it. So I think that's fine. But
it's a jaded perspective.
But you know, who of us isn't? So cool.
My comics like from me, not the internet.
Screw that internet thing. Do it the old-fashioned way.
Get off it.
Do it the way Ben Franklin intended. Anyway, I don't know what that meant.
What?
So, I have no idea. Shut up. So moving on. I wanted to mention this just because I saw it, and I think it's just kind of an interesting aside. So watching TV, in particular, I saw this while I was watching the World Cup, which, in case you live under a rock, the United States actually did not badly in the World Cup this year, and we made it all the way to the round of 16, where we lost pathetically to Ghana. Actually, supposedly, we have everything to be proud of, but I don't know. I watched the game, and it was kind of sad. So, but hey, go America. So, whatever. Anyway, the point being, it was on ABC, and in watching the commercials, there's a commercial for a new series coming out called No Ordinary Family. And initially, when I saw the trailer, of course, the trailer, you know, basically it's a family of four, you know, mother, father, two kids, and they go on a plane trip somewhere and crash land, and then somehow they come back and they have, like, all these superpowers. And I'm like, oh my God, Marvel's going to flip out. They're going to, like, sue these people because it's Michael Chiklis is in it. I'm like, oh my God, how much more blatant can you get? And then I stopped and I thought and I went, oh, it's ABC, which is part of Disney, which owns Marvel. So they don't care.
Just finding new ways to make more money off of it.
Yes.
In fact, Wolverine's going to guest star in the second episode.
Right. Because he's in like, everything. Like
some kind of
Bub,
family
show. He'll be like, hey, Bub, I heard you need a babysitter.
Yeah, it's...
he's like the creepy uncle.
Yeah. Oh,
God, smart. I can see the opening sequence in my mind. Like, you know, some kind of 80s sitcom. Yes, I'm starring Wolverine as James. And
just sitting there with a cigar in the mouth. wife beater, the Logan style. Oh God. yes. Yeah, so no, it's. I mean, I think it's intended to be, you know, a family palatable superhero show. And we kind of were talking about this before, and I think you made the point, Triplett. What is going on with all of these networks trying to do a superhero show.
Yeah, Heroes failed
it so well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first series, and I think we all can concede that the first season of Heroes was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from there, it went to hell. But now, you know, we've talked about before, NBC has The Cape that's coming out. This is coming out on ABC. I think that DC's talking about, well, DC is already talking about doing a live-action Blue Beetle, which they've already done tests for, and it sounds like they're trying to...
And it didn't look really terrible.
No, it did. Well, not from the
test.
That's
a strange
digitals.
Thing.
Yeah. So I don't know. There seems to be this push to try to put... Flash? Are they talking about doing a Flash series again? Or was that a film that they're talking about doing?
They're wanting to do a movie. Probably I haven't heard about a TV series. Like, Goyer's trying to write a script for the Flash movie. That was the last thing I heard about it.
I don't know. I'm just amazed. Because it just tends that... I mean, I think the only reason Smallville has done so well is because it hasn't tried to be too superhero-y.
No, it's very much more like teen drama-ish.
Yeah.
That's why I kind of watch it and then go, okay, I can't stand this anymore for a while, you know? Because it's just like, it gets a lot of the little drama issues going on there. And
yeah, I mean, the few episodes or even pieces I've watched is, you know, it's a lot of innuendo and, you know, people walking into rooms and,
pardon
me, arranging matches. no, but I wish that wasn't true. So anyway, no, yeah, so it's not really the same kind of thing. I mean, there's been a few superhero-y issues of that, or episodes of that series, but still, for the most part, that's not what it's been. So I don't know. I mean, and the series that have been on haven't done well, so.
Well, the UK has been experimenting with superhero telly as well in the last year or two. I can't for the life of me remember the name of the first show, but it was about a small group of superheroes who were pretty pathetic and hung out in a club most of their days. I can't remember what it was called, though. I just remember that one of the guys' superhero name was The Hotness.
The Hotness? No.
It was a comedy.
Oh.
I should probably have specified that.
Wow. That is hilarious.
That was called No Heroics, was what it was called.
No Heroics? So what it's like the Justice League meets Greatest American Hero.
Or Justice League International.
But in Britain. So, right on.
Set in modern-day Britain in a world similar to ours, but with one small difference. There are superheroes. The superheroes of the world are primarily modeled after those of Golden Age comic books, brightly colored la-di-di-da, aspects of society relating to superheroes include sidekick taxes, anti-cape leagues, the fortress, a bar of choice for the protagonists with three fundamental rules: no masks, no powers, no heroics.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Arriving not only to save people or avert disaster, but carrying out everyday tasks such as grocery shopping or taking a cigarette break.
Okay, NBC has The Cape, ABC has The No Ordinary Family. I believe that this will be the CBS, they'll remake it.
Yes.
That'll be the CBS show.
There you go.
Well, they should, I don't really know what the response to that one was, but one that, I'll tell you what, ABC commissioned a pilot of No Heroics in the US, with Pierce being joined by Will and Grace, a writer, Jeff Greenstein.
Well, there you go.
There you go. So they're all working on something. But the show that they should bring over was a show called Misfits. Which was the most recent one. It's just from earlier this year. It was a great show. It was about five young offenders who are performing community service to work off their asbos and whatever, you know, their offenses. Whenever a mysterious storm strikes mysterious storm strikes London. And they're all knocked out, and when they wake up, they have superpowers.
So it's a show about five bastards trying to deal with the fact that they've got superpowers as all the other strange freaks that the storm has created arrive to bedevil them.
Wow.
It's actually very good. I encourage anybody who hasn't watched it to watch it. It's a black comedy. It's very funny. And very good too. I mean, it's not heavy. You've got basically you've got a track star who was disgraced over a drug scandal who gains the power to rewind time and redo moments in time. You've got a girl who's able to drive anybody she touches into a sexual frenzy. You've got a complete chav. I don't know if Americans know the term chav. So I guess you substitute it with redneck, whatever. I guess the colloquial equivalent would be, who gains telepathy. A withdrawn arsonist who gains the power to become invisible. Hmm. And the core comedy character of the show is an Irishman named Nathan, who doesn't gain any powers at all and is incredibly bitter and jaded and always making inappropriate jokes throughout the course of the thing as he tries to deal with that fact.
Right.
And it's not them fighting crime or anything like that. It's them trying to get on with their lives with the terrible annoyance of being able to hear the thoughts of the person you're trying to talk to and what have you.
Huh.
Well, worth checking out.
Well, I don't have any Doctor Who to watch now, so.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. We'll may do a supplemental show and have to talk about that, so.
We'll have to talk about some Doctor Who at some point.
Okay.
Well, we can't do that without Enter.
Well, we can't. Yeah, exactly. We cannot.
Well, if anybody out there is wondering, by the way, it's what's kind of fanboy versus botcon this weekend, because that's where the other half of this.
Yeah, that's basically where Brian and Ender are. Yeah. So. Okay,
and
then
a chunk of the audience too,
and probably most of our listeners. Maybe not all. I don't know. We're a different podcast. We're not.
We're not
Transformers centric.
We're for the cool people.
Yes, we're an elite crowd. And so the final bit of news that we'll mention this week is that the trailer for Green Hornet popped up, which is not. It's sort of become comic book news, so we'll sort of mention it since the most recent iterations of the Green Hornet have been comics. So we'll kind of mention it here. But we won't spend too much time on it, other than to say the trailer is out. And it looks like a movie.
That's about it.
Yeah. I don't know. We kind of talked about this on New Soundwave, and I'll, you know, go ahead and say it again. But it's basically like, what if the Green Hornet was a stoner? And suddenly found himself with a ton of wealth and a dead father. And that's sort of where it seems to go. And it just, most of it seems to be the Green Hornet just facilitating Kato doing really awesome things. So I don't know. I it's Seth Rogen, so. I like
Seth.
Hey,
where did the rest of Seth Rogen go?
I don't know. He does this. He has this amazing ability to fluctuate in weight. So, you know, you see him in one film, and he'll be, you know, extremely trim, and then in the next film, he looks like a bloated elephant. I don't know. He's like the next generation's Jon Favreau. He just has this ability to change his size and shape at will.
He will eat cheeseburgers to dedicate it to his art, if that's what it requires.
Yeah, but then he'll turn around and he'll drop 80 pounds. I don't know. I hate him for that reason, because, you know, apparently I found all of his weight, so I don't know. But my God, yeah, he does do that. They've talked about that on talk shows and stuff too, that he just really fluctuates away. He looks decently trim in the show, but nowhere near, you know, what you would imagine. I one of the things that surprised me is it seems really close to the Kevin Smith script. Because, you know, Kevin Smith had written a script for Green Hornet, and that was turned into a comic. And I read, like, the first few issues of that, and it just sounds very similar based on what happens in the trailer. You know, spoiled rich kid, and then, you know, ends up turning into the Green Hornet, so...
It reminds me of something, but I can't put my finger on what exactly.
Batman. Okay.
No, it's not Batman. There's something I've seen where somebody has to be introduced to the idea that their father was a hero and then they pick up from where he left off, but...
Is it Phantom? Phantom? Phantom like that?
I mean, it's kind of, it is,
yeah.
It is very Phantom-y.
Oh, speaking of Phantom, there's a terrible sci-fi movie coming out soon of the Phantom. God, it looks terrible.
From Sci-Fi Channel?
Yeah.
Oh, does he fight a giant octopus or anything?
I think he fights just people in a black suit or something.
That's
boring. It's like the Trial of the Incredible Hulk, Daredevil Returns, and now he's the Phantom.
That's so boring. I mean, really, you know, if it's Sci-Fi Channel, I expect him to fight an oversized shark or a giant
snake
dinosaur.
Or snake or something. I see Dynamite are planning to bring out a whole new slew of Phantom comics sometime soon as well.
The movie is not worth our time, so let's just move on and forget about the movie. Talk about whatever else you want.
Well, let's talk about comics then. Let's bring that on. So, Triplet.
I am really hung up on what this thing I'm trying to remember is, though. So if anybody out there has any ideas as to what I might be thinking of, send me an email.
You're going to figure it out by the end of the show, I guarantee you.
Possibly, yes. I'll exclaim it loudly if I do.
You'll be like, Salmon! It's... No. anyway, so, Triplet. What you got for us this week, sir?
I read a few things. I read Avengers number 2... Green Lantern Corps 49, Return of Bruce Wayne 3, and a new issue of Amazing Spider-Man, which I think is 635.
It is 635. Take it in order, sir. Let's hear about it.
So, who read Avengers?
Oh, yeah.
I read Avengers.
So, what'd you think about it?
It was a lot more Bendis this time around, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is more of what you would expect.
It was basically a bunch of guys just talking about doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, whenever you need to travel through time, and Wolverine says, don't worry about it, no problem, we live in the Marvel Universe, I know exactly who you'll go to. You go to Reed Bloody Richards.
Yes.
You do not hoke out some Grant Morrison creation that Bendis developed a fixation on 2 years ago and did nothing with. They go to Marvel Boy, by the way.
Yeah. Who the hell is that?
Was there an explanation in the first issue why they didn't go to Reed Richards? Maybe I missed it.
I'm sure they were in space at the time.
So, it's like they're on the moon. They're unavailable. I'm sorry.
I know, it's like they rang up Avengers Mansion. I'm sorry. The Fantastic Four are out of town at the moment.
We're battling people on other planets right now. If you leave your name, number, and a detailed message... we'll get back to you as soon as we return. But hey, it's Marvel Boy, so you get to hang out at Stark's place.
I don't actually care as much as I made it sound, but it's just one of several things in this issue that is like Bendis.
Yeah.
Exclamation mark.
I don't know. It was very odd. It was not what I was.
Is the other thing where Tony offers to buy him a pony for the Kree technology?
Yes.
I did laugh at the
God. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll buy a pony.
Yeah, whatever else I may say about Bendis, he does almost always get laughs out of me. So.
Yeah.
But otherwise there's story stuff, like what the hell is up with Wonder Man?
Yeah, what's going on there?
No idea.
See, I haven't read Mighty Avengers, and I have no idea. Did he go crazy?
They didn't do anything with him in that at all, no.
So...
Remember, I couldn't remember if he was in Mighty Avengers or not when we were talking about the new Avengers lineup a couple of shows back.
I read the first issue. He was on the cover. That's what I remember. Yeah. He must be doing something.
So, I don't know.
Well, he seems a little pissy, but I don't know if there's if he's under somebody's control or not.
Yeah, or maybe he knows something they don't. So I don't know. But hey, then at the end you get Apocalypse and the Four Horsemen. So,
The Four Horsemen. That's like the Avengers, right? I mean, that's like
Wolverine,
and that white one, is that Spider-Man?
It looks Spider-Man.
And the Scarlet Witch, but I don't know who the red one is.
Is that Wonder Man or Thor?
I don't know. I thought Thor, but then he's like not holding a hammer, so I didn't think it was Thor.
He holding a hammer.
Yeah.
If he was holding a hammer,
could be the Hulk. Could be anybody. There's really nothing in there to let you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I'm assuming that's War, but...
Yeah. War is usually the Red Horseman.
Maybe it's Ares. Ares.
Oh, I see what you did.
Yeah.
Wow, that would be a little too obvious.
But more back to it, like, what in the hell is going on here? I mean,
yeah, again, and that's the end, and that's, of course, the end, the tease, and you're like, well,
you know, thanks. I was going to say we skipped over that, but then I flipped back through the pages and realized we didn't really skip over anything.
Nothing else happened.
Did he forget he was writing Avengers and thought he was writing X-Men or something? Maybe he just got...
It's a very bright and colorful and superhero-y sort of thing to happen, which is obviously the tone he's trying to strike with the book, so I see what he's doing with this. But it's not something that happens in Avengers. It's like that time they all fought the Sentry and Emma Frost saved the day.
What?
Wow.
Although I did love this double page spread early in the comic where we get a look at all the timelines.
Yeah,
that was good.
MC2, like, Days of Future.
Spider-Man asking if he was the 2099 Spidey, is that me?
Yeah. That's kind of funny. No, it's not. That answer
is no. Two in there even.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Iron Man 2020. Good stuff. Mm-hmm.
It's a big lineup there. So.
Yeah, so that's nice. But, you know, hey, it's Remitted Junior, so... He's doing what he does best on that page.
I mean, it wasn't a terrible issue. It's just that where we got the first issue, I was kind of hoping that they'd actually get going somewhere in the second issue, and it sort of feels like a recap of the first issue.
But that is what it is. I mean, the Avengers actually stand and spend two or three pages looking at panels from last issue.
Yeah.
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 Based on the cover, I was really hoping Wonder Man would basically come and punch them on the third page rather than the third to last page.
Yeah, and really not do that for very long. I was really, you know.
I like Wonder Man. That's why I was interested to see where this was going to go.
Okay, well, hopefully that'll get better.
I mean, it's not a bad issue or anything.
No,
forward. From the last issue.
We had that issue one that was so great, and it sort of built up the expectation, and then when you know, sort of get back to this, it's not necessarily
it's
what
an issue
you wanted.
It's IT Avengers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was a nothing book, and which we really don't want a repeat of.
No. Okay, what was next there for you?
What else did we have? Did I say Batman? Yeah, Batman.
I think you did mention Batman.
Bruce Wayne, number 3. Everybody read that?
Yes.
Yes.
I did actually.
I liked it. I liked it pretty good.
I mean, it certainly wasn't bad. It was definitely a love letter to pirate stuff.
Oh, yeah. How could you not have a love? I mean, it's pirates. Pirates are cool.
I mean, it's Bruce Wayne fighting Blackbeard. What's wrong with that?
True. Okay. I concede. But you get the feeling that it's definitely building as Bruce is tumbling forward in time.
And he's remembering more, which is cool.
He is remembering more. So.
And we get a little bit more story in it too. I mean, the whole thing with like the I mean, did you get the idea? I don't know if this is just something concocted in my head, but that maybe the reason he's tumbling through time is that Darkseid has programmed him to do something very, very bad. I mean, am I the only person that's kind of seen that?
I don't know, maybe.
Well, didn't they sort of imply that in the last issue there, in the midst of all that Morrison gibberish about how Batman was a weapon aimed at the 21st century?
I mean, because it just kind of seemed, because like at the beginning where he's like, you know, remember, you know, and all that, it just kind of made me think, oh, maybe that's why he's this crazy robot thing in the future. Maybe Darkseid did something to him. He's going to muck up the DC universe.
Yeah, like, how could you tell? No. But anyway, I mean, you know, and it was sort of like Batman getting to be a little Batman-y and figuring out traps and things, so that was exciting.
Yes.
Him beating Blackbeard and Blackbeard saying, how in the hell did you do that?
Yeah.
What damned kind of move was that? That's what he says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's Batman. That's what kind of move it was.
Yeah, he's Batman. Come on, he fought Blackbeard with a cutlass on the Bone Bridge. I mean, you know, that's awesome. That's awesome in a bottle.
But the big thing about it is, of course, you know, what we're getting next issue, which is the whole thing I've been looking forward to since they announced this thing, who he's going to run into in the next issue.
Yeah, which is...
This movie tanked. Woohoo!
Yeah. yes.
What is the next issue again?
It's Old West, so it's Jonah
Hex.
He's
in the Wild, Wild West.
Okay.
There is a point to make, though. They did have the discussion about when Dick was at, I guess it was a holding chamber that they're assuming that Bruce had been in. Because the...
That's back in Final Crisis. That's
from Final Crisis.
Oh, okay.
That's
is that
the
what
chamber
that was?
That Darkseid had him in, yeah.
Yeah, and of which the holes on that match the hole on the cowl, so...
And also, like, the remark about, shouldn't we be getting back to the Joker?
Yes.
Yeah, that was
the next issue of Batman and Robin.
Yeah. That was funny.
Yeah. So, going into the next, we are going to be dealing, tealing cards. See what I did there. With Jonah Hex.
I haven't hated an issue of Bruce Wayne. It's not what I was hoping it was going to be, you know, Return of Bruce Wayne, but I haven't hated an issue yet. I've enjoyed them all.
No, they're fun.
And the you art's know. Been great.
I need to sit down
issue.
And read this new one properly.
Yeah,
nice to see. I did see the art in this one. It's nice to see that Yannick Paquette has moved beyond just being a cheesecake artist, and he's actually commanding high-profile projects like this now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, some of the panels in this are really, really pretty spectacular, especially that final spread. Not spread, but it's one page, but it's still pretty cool. Come on, Old West Batman with bats.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hell
that was
yeah.
I bet he's got bullets in his guns that he shoots, and they shoot little bats at
him. Right.
They don't kill you, but you have, like, little bat battering
like
sticking out of your arms.
Rubber.
the kind of bullets that shoot bats at you.
Rubber bullets.
Rubber,
I swear.
Rubber bat bullets.
Yeah.
They all have little bats drawn on the side of them anyway, I'm sure.
There we go.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
I'm just the kind of surprised he's not teaming up with Bat Lash and they get some mileage out of that. In fact,
he'll have to show up.
Do something with that.
Won't he show up in the next issue? Wouldn't he'd be in around the time as Jonah Hex, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, all Western heroes lived in, like, the same 5-year period.
Yeah, that's all.
I'm sure he'll be in the issue.
It's like 15, you know, it's like 18.
But I could really see Morrison doing something heavy purely with the fact that his name is Bat. You know, just, I don't know what exactly, but I could see it happening.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, what else there?
Do you want to tackle Green Lantern Corps?
I've got tons of stuff, but yeah, that's, yeah, okay, I'll take that. So, and you had one more then?
Just Amazing. But you said
Amazing.
You read
we'll
it,
talk,
too.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Amazing was good.
It actually was amazing.
Yeah. lots of stuff going on.
We'll have a lot to talk about for that. So, go ahead there, McFeely.
Okay, what did I have this week? Well, I think I'll spare you all another ramble about Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four, shall I?
We can assume that it's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is what you may take away from this. Essentially, in this issue, that this is a follow-on from the War of Four Cities story that I've been hyping up repeatedly, is basically on pause for the moment. To begin this story, this is the Future Foundation storyline, in which Reed has taken a class of talented youngsters, including evolved Mole Man, clone of the Wizard, and some children from Atlantis, including his own daughter, who has reprogrammed Dragon Man to be super intelligent. And he's taken them all and formed a class where they're going to... Basically, after the events of last issue, where he pulled out of an organization of scientists because they weren't looking forward, they were trying to maintain the status quo, he's trying to build the future with these children. But that leaves Franklin feeling a little bit... feeling ignored. So this is actually a complete one-shot comic where he and Johnny and Leech, who is also living at the Baxter Building at the minute, go off to a toy store where Arcade is launching the newest line of toys centered on the Impossible Man.
Huh.
Arcade claims he's gone straight. Yes, but no. There are
the toy store is really Murder World, right? It's really Murder World.
Well, it's a toy store full of giant anvils and traps and things. For no other reason, it seems, than he just decided he wanted to mess with the Impossible Man.
There you go.
It's just it's a fun single issue. It's not the best one that's come out of the series on Hickman, because the basic reason Arcade does what he does is not particularly clear. But the character work in the issue is great stuff. So the Johnny and Franklin thing is very genuine and very well done. It doesn't feel like a forced story element at all. It's very well handled. And there's they've been cutting into the issues recently as well, these interludes to New Earth, which is a parallel planet created during Mark Miller's run. So, you know, Hickman's not throwing the ideas out the window. I think we did talk about an earlier issue, one of the very earliest issues Hickman did, where he went back to New Earth and basically said, time moves faster, everybody died, it's over.
What?
Because that happened. But now we're continuing to see the continuing thing. At this point, we reach 1,217 years in the future as the planet has grown and changed. And we're not getting the full picture yet, just really threatening snippets and like... without context either. The Ultron Collective reaches its maximum population and concludes their terraforming project. Planet Ultron is complete. Things like that. Lord Lightwave is restless. At night he dreams of a halcyon tomorrow spent serving Galactus, and all day he longs for the night. Just these really threatening little one snippets where you can't even believe that the things that they're describing are happening on the same planet.
Wow.
It's very interesting. It's just a double-page spread that's been in the last couple of issues. And it's clearly going somewhere, but I don't know where. I don't know if it's going to culminate in this Future Foundation story, or if it's going to go beyond the Four Cities storyline, or what. But I'm very interested to see.
I just hope it's not going to a new comic book.
Oh, no, I don't.
Like a Fantastic Force 2 comic, or... something stupid. No.
Oh, well, you remember how successful the last try of that was.
No.
I think Marvel recently enough that Fantastic Four can't support spin-offs. At the moment, anyway. That's the thing about the Fantastic Four. Even Miller and Hitch couldn't push the numbers up. You know, the Fantastic Four is what it is, and I don't think it'll never be Marvel's number one book. I think they've put one of the hottest creative teams of modern times on the comic, and it still didn't set the world on fire. So I think Fantastic Four fans just have to, if you're bothered about sales, you know, Fantastic Four will always be around. And right now, with this creative team, you know, I'm happy to see Hickman stick around for as long as possible. This issue is penciled by Neil Edwards, not Dale Eaglesham, who I believe penciled that terrible issue that I was complaining about the horrible art on a couple of months ago. But he's
is that
done
the one
with
Artie and them at the party? Because that was awful.
That's the one.
Yeah, that was horrible.
It's very Brian Hitch-like. But he does much better in this one. And he actually draws a really nice thing as well. Because essentially, without dropping too many spoilers, the thing is closely tied in with what the Future Foundation decide they want to do for their first project. And the thing is—it's actually mentioned in the letters page. One of the readers says that the thing hasn't really been getting any focus at all. And I hadn't noticed it, but he's quite right—he hasn't. And apparently, that's going to change now, coming up in the following storyline. So, I always like a bit of the thing, so I'm looking forward to that as well. No, I really can't say anything against Hickman's Fantastic Four at all. Go and read it if you're not, for goodness sakes. Especially with this 3 storyline and with Steve Epting coming on to do the artwork as well. It's going to be good. Heralds, I've talked about this for the last 3 weeks running. The storyline goes back to making sense in this issue. Although, I'm pretty convinced that it has literally happened every time now. The recap page at the start of the comic tells me a piece of information that I didn't properly deduce for myself from the events of the previous issue. So that's Catherine Immonen for you, I suppose.
Yeah, I think I thumbed this. So. I've been thumbing
these
issues. Yes,
well, this has, this has them trying to... basically, Hang on, let me get the exact... What is the quote? Nova has been brought back to life as the embodiment of a living star. You know, that has not been concretely explained in the course of the comic at all, so now we know thanks to the recap page. And she is attempting to merge with this girl, Frances, who the Silver Surfer left an imprint of Frankie's humanity in, and hence she's being drawn to her. The Silver Surfer wanted to honor Frankie's memory, so he left an imprint of her humanity in this girl, Frances. And Nova is being drawn to her and trying to merge with her. But it's also got Valeria from Fantastic Four involved. She's got involved, along with all the other female heroes who have become involved in the story. Valeria's tagging along with them as well. And there's a little bit of a plot twist at the end of the story involving her too. But I've been enjoying this miniseries, as you know, so you know, not too much more to say about it that I haven't said over the last couple of weeks. What I will say something about is Jeff Parker's Namora one-shot from this week, another Women of Marvel project. Namora, of course, from the Agents of Atlas, so I had to get it. Because we all know my Atlas love at this point. It's a there's nothing truly stand out about the script of the comic. Namora discovers she's trying to help Namor round up the various scattered Atlantean settlements throughout the issues, now that Namor is consolidating Atlantis again. She finds a small group of them who are living by a well that seems to be giving off energies that are keeping them healthy and vital. And she ventures into its depths and is mysteriously offered all the things that she could ever want. So it's one of those stories about having to overcome, you know exactly the type of story I'm telling. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about. The real draw here, honestly, is the art. It's by Sarah Pichelli, who I'm only familiar with from her work with Catherine Immonen on Runaways. But it's just very, very nice. The whole thing is underwater, except for the first couple of pages. But it's a really beautiful, understated sort of underwaterness. There's not bubbles glooping everywhere and rippling shades of photoshopped light. It's, just the way that hair swirls above a head or something is the only way that you can really tell you're underwater. But you absolutely know when you're looking at these pages what the setting is, even if the background is just, in this particular panel, a sheen of orange. You still know where you are and what's happening. Very nice. That's the main draw of that one, I think. Didn't tell me anything new about Namora, but still a book worth reading, and mainly for the pretty pictures. A book not so much worth reading was Ultimate Avengers 2. Oh. Anybody else now read this? No?
I thumbed it as well.
Is this the Loeb or is this the Miller book?
No, this is Miller. Remember Ultimate Ghost Rider?
See, I can't keep up with it. There's two books out there now. I have no idea which is which now.
New Ultimates is the Loeb one, and new and Ultimate Avengers is the Miller one. But like last issue was Ghost Rider. We'd better get ready to fight him. Okay, we fought Ghost Rider.
And that was the entire content of the issue. Whereas this one explains Ghost Rider's origin after he fights the Punisher a bit. But it just ramps up and up and up and up and up and ends on such a... potentially the pinnacle of ridiculous, mindless Mark Miller bombast that I've ever seen. And it has... it's a functional comic, but it's so painfully Mark Miller as to be frustrating to me. And it has convinced me I don't think I'm going to bother with the third volume, because they've already got, you know, Ultimate Avengers 3 solicited to go. And I'm just not going to bother with it at this point. Hmm. Steve Dillon doing the art.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that's for 3, though. This is still Lionel Francis Yu. And I like Lionel Yu. I like his art.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I like his art. I like both of their art.
There's just not enough happening in Ultimate Avengers 2 to justify it. I mean, there's literally... the story, last issue and this issue could have been a comic one issue, honestly. If
yeah,
they
lost me with the last series. I'm pretty much done. Done with Ultimate.
Series was that Ultimate with the Red Skull? You the one with the Red Skull?
What's that?
Hello?
Did we lose Triplet?
Oh, I'm still here.
There you go.
Hear me now?
Yeah.
Are you referring to the series with the Red Skull?
Yes. That was what killed it for me. I was like, I didn't even pick up the last issue. I don't even know how they resolved it. Did they ban him?
Yes, funnily enough. Right, well, that was that, actually. I just...
Yeah.
So
I'd hope for more, because
I
like...
Secret War.
Ah.
It's a Hickman week this week, with Hickman on Secret Warriors as well. That's definitely like his number two book in my eyes, with Fantastic Four being number one. But this is a very solid, very well-structured issue with a secret UN hearing as... is it Jasper Sitwell? I never remember which one it is. Jasper Sitwell and Dum Dum Dugan report on an attack by the Howling Commandos on a Hydra base in China. But the issue is structured in the time-honored style of, oh, I remember it as if it was last week, and then we proceed to get the flashbacks to the meeting of the Howling Commandos beforehand. This could be the last run. And then their major attack on the base itself. It's just a very well-structured issue. So... The colors of Secret Warrior, just as I'm flipping through the pages, the colors of Secret Warriors are so muted, this thing might as well be sepia-toned.
Hmm.
I wish it had more color in it. It's such a startling contrast, just even in terms of writing and the way the stories are being told. You know, it's a story about a personal war. It's not that. But, you know, it's a shadow war being waged under the eyes of the world. Under the nose of the world, between men with guns, and it's all dark sepia tones compared to Fantastic Four, where he's turning in a book that's bursting with bright colors and in completely crazy fantastical adventures happening for all the world to see in front of you, screaming, look at me, we are fantastic and wonderful. It's such a remarkable... You wouldn't believe they were from the same author, honestly, but... I like Jonathan Hickman. The end. JD, what about yourself?
Well, actually, let's shoot to Melissa and see what she read this week.
Do we want to cover Green Arrow now?
You may.
I did read Green Arrow number one. So, you know, there's a big forest in the middle of Star City. Everybody's kind of not really sure what's going on with that. But it was pretty good, I think. You know, I don't know much of the backstory with Brightest Day because I haven't waded through all that yet. But
I was about to ask you that. I was going to ask you if you've read Brightest Day or anything, because just from thumbing this human, I was looking at it, and I thought, if you didn't, would you get this at all?
Yeah, I don't know. What did you guys think? Maybe you guys tell me what you got, and we'll see if I got what you got.
Well, I mean, basically, I mean, as far as, like, the lead-up, the forest was not there before. Part of the city had been destroyed.
Right. that I grabbed that, that it was sort of a new thing, and it was this weird, mysterious thing.
And it was, yeah. It was basically the forest was put in by a live man, formerly dead man.
Thank you for calling him a live man.
I will milk that for the next few weeks.
I just love that name. I wish DC would officially call him that.
Just call him a live man.
Yeah. It'll settle. I'm sure that'll take. We got Rolf, after all. I think that if people keep plugging away at the alive man idea, he'll start getting referred to like that in solicits before you know it.
But basically, the White Ring created the forest. So that's sort of the important thing to know about the forest is that it was created with...
I grabbed that at the end with the big symbol thing, and then I read the notes by the writer, so I kind of got some of those tidbits there about, like, kind of what was going on. So
That's a good PS to comic book writers out there. The notes help.
Yes, we like notes. Notes are good. But yeah, it was interesting with all the Robin Hood references they made, because really he is sort of Robin Hood-like, you know, living in a forest and stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, so I think it'll be kind of interesting to see where they go from there, if that's going to continue on sort of the Robin Hood-ish theme. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that it is interesting that they're going in that way, especially because even as the woman in the issue points out, it's not like people don't know who he is. I mean, everybody in the DC universe knows that Oliver Queen is Green Arrow. So
he was mayor of Star City for a little while, so I think everybody knows at this point.
Well, they didn't necessarily know at that point, but they knew, especially during the trial, with the trial and everything. That's what pretty much revealed who he was to everybody that didn't know at that point. But there is a new element that's been brought in, which is what is this character's name? I didn't catch it.
You talking about the lady with the
mask? Yeah, the lady with the mask.
Oh, yeah. She was interesting.
I
don't remember what her name was either.
Yeah, I didn't read it. I just kind of thumbed it. But I know who you're talking about.
So, there's a new... She's the new head of the Queen Industries. So... Where's a full face mask? So I'm sure there's someone.
Yeah, there's
going to
be something interesting behind that.
Someone that we know may be creeping behind that. So,
it'll be Junior from Secret Six. He wore a full body cloak and see how that turned out.
Isabel Rochev.
There you go. Thank you. Sure. So I thought the most shocking thing was that the commissioner was assassinated right in the middle of the right in the middle of the issue. Wow.
He was kind of a dick.
Not kind of. He was a complete dick. So yeah.
So is that another minority death courtesy of DC this week?
No.
I thought he was black.
No.
I'm wrong. Okay.
Yep. Total white guy.
I must just be transposing his cookie cutter persona on top of every African American police chief I've ever seen in a film.
Right. Yeah.
I'll be damned. Out of a queen.
Yeah. But the final footnote on this was the Hal showing up, I think, was the really.
Yeah.
And ending up having all the power drained out of his ring.
Yes, that was very interesting.
That's a not good thing.
Definitely. Which he said, not good, not good.
Yeah, yep. That's exactly what he said. So, so you know, we get the Green Arrow and Green Lantern teaming up once more. So that'll be romping good times for those two
characters. I think that's about the only way they can get away with that. Just the precedent for the team-up, because I think to launch a book I mean, yeah, it's coming off the back of Brightest Day, but I mean, maybe try and establish the book's identity first before you start throwing in the crossovers and tying it in with all the white light stuff that's going on. You take a look at Birds of Prey or The Flash, where they haven't been bothered at all. Yes, there's been a banner plastered over the cover, but Green Lantern hasn't been dropping by with tea and biscuits, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But it's like the precedent for the team up is obviously why they've done it, but you know, then DC has been leaning on precedent a little too heavily these days, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be like this in the past, so it now it is again, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So I don't know. Well, awesome. And then you actually read something I don't think any of us read.
Yeah, it's Me and My Vampires. Woo!
Because how could you resist?
Yeah. I hear these vampires are popular. Tell me about it.
Well, these particular vampires, this is sort of a new... The name of the comic book is American Vampire. And actually, I don't remember if it's all... At least for several of the beginning episodes, Stephen King is involved with some of the writing.
This is a Vertigo title, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Man, add a bit of class to the show. Brilliant.
Yeah. Ooh. And, but yeah, it looks like it's pretty interesting. The sort of premise with the vampires here is that where the vampire is made is just has as much of an influence as who makes the vampire. And so there's a group of European vampires in Old West America that are kind of like running things, and they've helped to capture this bad guy who they named Sweet. His nickname's Sweet because he loves candy. And during his escape, he gets blood in his eye from one of the vampires. And, you know, he sort of ends up becoming a new creation. Like,
that sounds like Axe Cop.
What's that?
It sounds like a comic strip, Axe Cop. You know, you guys know Axe Cop, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he got blood on him, and he turned into whatever. Yeah.
He was like Dino Cop or something, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm Dino Cop now or something, what he says. It's crazy. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, yeah. Sorry. Okay. Just, it was the first thing that came to my mind.
But yeah, so he can withstand, you know, he can walk around in the sunlight, and he can also, like, withstand water. Like, they tried basically drowning him after he died. And that didn't work, you know, like once somebody came in search of his coffin for whatever, maybe goods or something that he'd stolen, he managed to get out of it and, you know, ate them like a proper vampire does. And, you know, so at this point, the European vampires who are sort of in control of everything are trying to figure out what exactly to do with him. And it kind of goes back and forth because there's sort of some of the backstory there about Sweet's creation. And then we've also got a storyline that's in the mid-20s where he, you know, there's a girl that's attacked by these vampires and Sweet saves her and makes her a new vampire. So they've got his story going and her story going. He basically, you know, turns her and kind of leaves her to figure out shit on her own. But it's really kind of an interesting story to see what the strengths and weaknesses are of these American vampires, basically. The main weakness we've learned about so far is that they're very weak during the new moon. If there's no kind of moon out, then you know, that's not good for them at all. So it'll be interesting to kind of see what else goes from there. But... yeah. So,
awesome.
Vampires in the Old West in the 20s. It's pretty interesting.
I mean, how can you beat that?
Yeah. Because we're only put anything in the Old West.
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. Except apparently for the Jonah Hex film.
Except for Jonah Hex, yeah.
Except for someone that actually belongs in the Wild
right.
West.
Right, yeah. Not them. You have to transpose them. It has to be somebody that belongs somewhere else and then put them in the...
Zombies. Area. Zombies work, but
zombies
no.
Zombies in the Old West, yes.
Not like a Western character, no. God, no.
No, okay, so let's round this thing out. I read Green Lantern Corps 49, in which we are now fighting the Alpha Lantern. So there's a bit of a question, previous issues, about what the heck was going on with the Alpha Lanterns. There was this whole resistance is futile assimilation sort of element that was coming in, and it's pretty clear from basically the first panel what's going on, because if you take a look at the face there on the first panel, you realize, oh, I know who that is. And then they wait the entire issue to really reveal it, because the Alpha Lanterns spend all this time talking to what they call the Alpha Prime, and in the meantime, they keep they try to capture John Stewart and Gantha is worried, and anyway, calamity ensues. It's not really a great issue, but basically, what we find out is that Cyborg Superman has taken over the Alpha Lanterns and is causing things to go amok. So, there you go. And
when did Cyborg Superman become a Green Lantern villain?
When he joined the Sinestro Corps.
There you go.
All right.
Okay, fair enough. Standard, I guess that'll do.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, and that's the only thing I could think of. It's like I don't understand why he's fighting. Well, I mean, it goes back. I mean, he destroyed Coast City, so you know, he pretty much garnered the wrath of Hal Jordan in that. So, you know, and it makes sense that since the Alpha Lanterns are largely technological, that you know, he wouldn't want a hand in mucking that up. Yeah, and it looks like John's really in a good, having a good time at the end of this issue. As he sort of looks like he's in the process of getting ripped open.
Kind of looks like he's in a dentist chair or something.
It
like
does sort of, yeah, look like a sadistic dentist chair. But as far as in-depth things that we learn, not much, other than Ganthet and Kyle and what's her name? Kyle's girlfriend now.
I always forget her name, too.
I know, it's Sora? Like Ryan.
Is her name Sora?
Sora, yeah, that sounds
right. Is that her name?
We'll go with that.
I like her character, but I always
Sinestro's
forget her
daughter.
Name.
It's supposed to be Sinestro's daughter.
Yeah.
So basically, they're the only ones. They basically decide that if they, with the Alpha Lanterns trying to take everybody over, instead of doing the smart thing and trying to overwhelm them, they're going to, just the three of them, you know, fix whatever is going wrong. Which doesn't make a lot of sense, but apparently it
makes
sense.
That's what main characters do.
Right.
When they're starting their book.
But yeah. They make a point. Like, if they would have just done that, like, I would have bought it. Like, I would have just said, oh, okay, they're going to fix it, because it's Ganthet and Kyle and whatever, you know. But they actually make the point to say, we can't call for reinforcements because they might be turned into Alpha Lanterns, just like happened during Darkest Night. So, or Blackest Day, whatever. So, I don't know. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But whatever. We'll go with it. And see where we go from here. But otherwise, I don't know that. I just didn't feel like a lot happened. I don't know. I sort of felt empty inside afterwards. Especially
empty like an Alpha Lantern.
Well, if the last, like, to me, like, if the, it probably would have been a lot more interesting in the construction if they would have left off the initial panel, which basically made it clear that everything is being done by, Hank Henshaw. Like, if they would have just, if they would have left that out, and I would have spent the entire issue going, what is going on? What is the deal? Why is this? And then have that final panel where it's like, oh, okay, I get it. They reveal it in the first set, and I knew what was going on throughout the whole thing, and I just sort of felt robbed. I don't know.
Yeah.
It didn't build very well, but whatever. So on to more exciting things. I did read, of course, I read Generation Lost, issue 4, when things go terribly wrong. There's sort of two bits to this issue. You have what I would consider to be a subline where Maxwell Lord is still sort of pulling some strings behind the scenes. And I'll come back to that, because I think that's the more interesting part of what goes on. And then there's what I would almost consider to be a semi-comical subline, which is the main line of the story, since it takes up the most time, where our heroes have found themselves in Russia, St. Petersburg specifically, and they end up fighting a team of Red Rockets, as well as one of the original Red Rockets, and because all of these Red Rockets are the sort of group of Red Rockets are fighting the one Red Rocket, and there's all this backstory about, you know, and there's a lot of like little comical bits where Skeet starts spouting off, oh well, this Red Rocket that's, you know, sort of an outlaw is trying to return Russia to its communist, you know, background, and he's being thwarted by all of these, you know, the current regime and blah, 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 and they're like, wow, did you hack into records for that? And he's like, no, it's on his blog. So, just sort of like, nice. Blue Beetle, I think it has a moment where he's like, well, aren't we going to jump in there and help? And they're all like, no, not really. This is totally domestic. We don't want to get in the middle of this. We really don't care.
We're not the JLI anymore.
Yeah. Like, we've got bigger fish to fry, and plus it's Russians beating up other Russians. How can it get much better than that? Then, of course, they endanger civilians, so they have to act. And what's really funny is, in the midst of the whole thing, Red Rocket seems to get the impression that the JLI is there to help him. And so, you know, now he's like, oh, you know, now we are the true new JLI, and I am a part of your team. And they're like, no, you're really not. But he keeps coming back to that, and by the end, they all sort of, it's like they're so tired, they just stop arguing with them. They're just like, okay, whatever, you're not, but okay. So, and of course, you know, the final is with Red Rocket announcing that they're the Justice League International. With a huge, you know, sort of one page of all of them, so of which, and they still argue that they're not. But the more interesting part of the story, I think, is the Maxwell Lord piece of this, where in the beginning of the issue, there's a scientist, and Max comes in and starts talking to the guy. And he says something about, you know, sort of building a conversation or relationship because that makes the process easier. And the guy's like, well, you know, what process? And he's like, oh, controlling your mind. And when he goes in to start controlling this scientist's mind, he transforms into a dead Black Lantern version of... I don't guess it's Max, but it's definitely a dead Black Lantern.
Now, I only leafed the issue, but was it the Black Lantern symbol or was it the White Lantern symbol that's on their chest?
That is the Black Lantern symbol.
Okay, because yeah. I was only glancing at it, but they seem to be sneaking the. I find I have trouble telling the two apart at times.
Well, and I think
I'm not
that's
paying attention.
I think that's what's starting to become really interesting is that yeah, those two symbols are very similar, and that is not by mistake, I'm sure. The way you can tell, or the way I'm telling the difference, is that the White Lantern symbol is much more sort of spiky and thin, whereas the Black Lantern symbol is very bold and thick.
And the Black Lantern is attached to a zombie, and the white one looks like it's still there.
Yeah. Exactly. So... yeah, and even Max starts to bleed almost like a it looks like a very dark colored blood as he's doing
looks like
his mind
black.
Control.
It's just
almost a black blood. Yeah. So all of this stuff happens with Booster and the rest of the team. And when you get to the end, you know, Booster basically figures out that, you know, look, Max is still pulling all these strings. He's the one that's brought us all together. You know, it's got to be him. And he basically just starts yelling out at Maxwell. He's like, you know, I know you're following us. I know you know what's going on. You know, talk to us. Tell us what's going on. What do you want? And, you know, demands that he answer him. And from the comm of one of the fallen Red Rockets, you know, it's Max. And he's like, okay, Booster, what do you want to know? But keep in mind, I've had a pretty bad day. And there's just a stack of Black Lantern corpses all over this room. And, again, he's covered in this sort of thick black blood. And so this is the first time, you know, with a lot of these other Black Lantern or previously dead DC heroes have come back, there's been indications that they're back, but something's not quite right. And we hadn't really seen any of that effect on Max yet, and now we are, and with a vengeance. So I think it's going to, you know, it may take this in a whole different direction now. Obviously, since the rest of the world can't even remember Max, and these are the only people that can, and not even all of them can. So, so interesting. I don't know. That, like I said, it's something different.
Sounds like I need to read this.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Generation Lost is
really
cool.
Yeah, I feel
cool.
A bit bad about not jumping on it from the start, honestly. I was making a choice between one of the two bi-weeklies.
I don't know. I mean, again, I come at it because I like Booster, but the rest of what's going on is really growing on me.
I'm not saying I made the wrong choice in going for Brightest Day, because I'm enjoying Brightest Day, but I am saying to myself, like, this is a good comic every time I look at it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Doing well. As I say, I had my doubts with the Booster title itself. If they would tie them in too tightly, but
I think they've done good.
More a product of worrying about the fact that I haven't bought Generation Lost more than for any impact of quality on Booster based on how good the last issue of Booster was.
Yeah, and it seems like the timelines have been decently different so that they're not one's not affecting the other too much.
Part two of this story in Booster next week.
Yeah. So I'll do two quick mentions. One is I did read Power Girl 13, or read part of it anyway, which was okay, but not fantastic. But it did tie in to some of what's going on as far as the search for Max, and of course since she was part of some of that time period. The interesting part to me is parts of this issue tied into issue one of Generation Lost, and you got to see some of a discussion that happened between Power Girl and Booster, but you got to see it from Power Girl's perspective, which I thought was kind of neat and interesting. And then they also, you know, they show her fighting some Omax, but they show the point at which Max makes the world forget about him, which I kind of thought was interesting as well. So but that's really the only reason I wanted to mention that. There's been something that's been hyped in a few other comics which did come out, and I unfortunately tried to read and couldn't make it through, which was Sea Bear and Grizzly Shark.
I had a couple of customers asking me for this week. I didn't get any in. I'm going to order some from them for them. But
is that Kirkman?
Who wrote that? Let's see. It was...
Like Robert Kirkman? Because I saw a cover for it.
There's two separate pieces. One is Otley, and the other is Jason Howard. So,
thinking it was Kirkman.
It's sort of, I mean, it's very sort of tongue-in-cheek. You know, there's a story about how Earth originally had water where there was land and had land where there was water. And then they got flipped. And so you end up with Sea Bear and Grizzly Shark.
Together they fight crime.
They don't even do anything together, which is what's...
Sounds like a sci-fi movie, kind of like what we were talking about.
Yes, this is something that you would expect to see on the Sci-Fi Network. You know, it had the potential to be, I think, kind of interesting, you know, as far as, like, from concept. It's basically just an excuse to show a lot of innards and people being ripped apart and heads cut off and bodies falling apart and, you know, and to not even really be that sort of funny and interesting other than just a chance to draw a lot of gore. So I was really kind of disappointed for some of the hype. You know, like, there's one pit that's supposed to be funny and just sort of ends up weird and terrible where, like, these, you know, I guess they're Hicks sort of people were out hunting and they get attacked by grizzly shark and the kid gets, like, eaten in half, and then the rest of the comic, the guy's just carrying around the still alive half of his son.
Holy God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the kid just keeps making jokes, you know. Like, at one point he tries to take a bunch of aspirin and then realizes his stomach is laying on the ground.
Is he an enchanted person?
No. Yeah. No. It's just he got ripped in half and then they use, like, the campfire to cauterize the lower half of his body. It doesn't make any sense.
I feel this does not make sense.
Yeah.
This does not make any sense at all. It's really just an excuse to have a shark on the ground and a bear in the water. And
should have at least used voodoo on him. That would have at least made sense while he was still alive.
No.
Yeah.
It's really... Yeah. You know. It's... Yeah. It's really kind of disgusting. Anyway. But yeah, I only mentioned it because it was hyped in a lot of other comics. So, in a quick mention, I'll mention for Superman, and then we will be almost done with this so that we can talk about Spider-Man. But Superman 700 came out, and of course, everybody knows, but it's worth mentioning again, I hate Superman.
So why did you read it?
I didn't really read it, but I did skim it. And the only reason I did even attempt to skim it and read some of it, I read, like, the first story and was bored to tears. Started to read the second, and there was Batman stuff going on, and I, you know, I love Batman, but just didn't care enough because it's Superman. But the main thing was the beginning of the continuing JMS line, which is the prologue to our Grounded, in which Superman is going to spend the next several issues walking.
Woohoo!
Across the country.
Is he going to solve crimes?
I don't know.
With his mind?
I don't know.
There
really is not. I mean,
that's Kung Fu.
There's a whole, like, lead up.
The concept is an interesting one.
Yeah. I mean, there's a concept where he decides he's got to sort of do some
soul searching. He's trying to reconnect. I mean, it's interesting. It's like I would have almost half expected Straczynski to just go whatever and just do whatever he wanted to do. But I like the fact that he's taking as a springboard the fact that Superman has been out of his own books for the last year and is having him reconnect with people by doing this. I think the thing that I enjoyed most about this story, though, was the fact that everybody except Superman was having the same reaction I was to that stupid bitch.
What?
Which is the woman who's the story is called "The Slap Felt Round the Hurled Round the World," when some woman slaps Superman for not being on the planet, so that he could have maybe looked into her husband's head with his X-ray vision and seen a tumor. The most preposterously selfish and short-sighted reason, and nobody else but Superman gives a crap. The whole narration of the thing, it's like, it's the perfectly normal human reaction to that one blinkered, selfish attitude that this woman had. It's like, why weren't you there to laser a tumor out of my husband's head with your magic eyes? Even though I would never have met you, or the chances of that even happening, even if you were here, were very slim. But I love the fact that everybody's having the normal reaction, and yet it still gets to Superman all the same.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
So does he spin the world back around time?
Yeah, really. It flies backwards. You know. Yeah, I don't know. It's really, you know, and he goes to... So apparently this is all going to be a soul-searching thing. I do love a lot of the Batman stuff that's in this. The kid wearing a Batman shirt.
I just read the Straczynski strip.
No, but even in that, even in like the end of Grounded, there's a kid playing baseball and he's got a Batman shirt on.
Oh.
So anyway,
does Batman license his image? Does Wayne Industries handle that? Or
yeah, really? Not sure. It's a good question. So anyway, there you go, Superman. Gotta hate him. Anyway, but the important thing. The most important thing that happened this week has to be Amazing Spider-Man 635. And I think most of us read this. Maybe not Melissa.
I did.
But...
No, I didn't.
And neither did McFeely. McFeely, you did not read this?
I did.
Oh, you did read it. I'm sorry. Okay, I was going to be like, what? No. Okay.
Come in, come.
So, I don't know. I don't even know that I can do this issue justice because I just jumped back into Spider-Man. But basically, where we left off last time was Ezekiel shows up, sort of carcassy and covered in spiders, and telling Spider-Man that there's this war against the spiders going on by the Kravenoffs. And he sort of fills in some of the blanks for Peter, basically talking about how they're going to need spider blood to bring him back.
Spider blood.
Yeah. And it sort of leaves off with Spider-Man, you know, asking who was next. And then there's a long fight with... Now, this girl... And again, I'm off on some of who these side characters are. This is one of the Spider Girls, correct? And...
Which one?
Arachne? Arachne? Or whatever her name is?
Arachne, the second Spider-Woman, and Aranya, who has never been Spider-Girl.
Okay, Aranya.
And they killed the fourth Spider-Woman, Maddie Franklin, last issue. Vladimir Kraven's other son, back to life as that monster thing that's running around in this issue.
As a big lion, wolf, werewolf thing.
Yeah.
So they end up fighting him and some of the other, I guess, Kravenoffs in the park, as well as Kane showing back up to help out. And then Spider-Man, they end up capturing the Spider-Woman and Arachne? I'm sorry, I can't say her name. Anyway, Spider-Man has an out with Kane. And they fight about, you know, who's more responsible because Kane, you know, tells him to run and Spider-Man won't. And Ezekiel shows back up and says, let's go find Venom and Anti-Venom because they can help us with this whole spider thing. And shockers of shockers, it's a trap.
That was
Yeah.
It's a trap.
Remember that stupid spider totem crap that JOS brought into the book and made it look like they were revisiting? Psych!
No,
it's the chameleon!
It's Mysterio and the chameleon aiding the Kravenoffs. So
it's kind of like, this is like almost like a sequel to the Mysterio gauntlet thing. It's like, ha-ha, gotcha!
Yeah.
Again...
So, and then the most amazing thing happens, maybe. They fight Spider-Man, and Spider-Man gets shot and stabbed and sacrificed, and Kraven the Hunter's back.
Man, I
don't know
what's going on here.
What could be going on? I mean, is there really a mystery here?
The storyline they've spent this long building up to is just about Kraven coming back.
Well, I mean, but is there any mystery as far as like what is going on with Spider-Man? Or, I mean, is this an actual mystery, or do we all know what's going on here?
What do you mean going on? Like the
as far as what happened to Spider-Man?
Oh, you mean like what happened to him? Is what you're saying?
Yes.
Is that really Spider-Man, or is that someone else is what you're saying?
Yes. Do we all agree that that was Kane?
That's what I was thinking.
That's okay. What I thought.
That's what I was going to say. That's more of what I was getting at. We all agree that that was not Spider-Man, that that was Kane, correct?
Probably not. I don't imagine Spider-Man was stabbed to death.
No. Okay. No, well, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, especially since Kane looked an awful lot like Spider-Man, in which he did not look like Spider-Man in the previous issue. So,
and he would have Spike's blood in him, so it would work for the purposes that they want, but will hopefully, being what with his critical degeneration, cave in halfway through, and Kraven will crumble back to death.
Yes. Okay, so I just wanted
hopefully
to make
we
sure...
haven't just spoiled everything.
Yeah, I mean, if you hadn't... Well, again, we always assume here... Please don't get mad. We always assume here that this is a spoiler-rich environment.
Oh, and I mean, Ryan, if you're editing sure this, we're sorry.
I'm editing this. It's okay.
Oh, okay.
He won't even know. So yeah. I mean, yeah. Based on earlier events in the comic, it would assume that this is Kane. So,
God, I want Kraven back. I want him to stay back. Get rid of his stupid kids.
Which, if you think
you can't bring Kraven back.
They brought the Green Goblin back. Bucky's back. He's Captain America. Why can't you bring Kraven back?
Which, if you
because the Kraven topped himself.
He's looking pretty good right now. He's got red eyes.
I'm telling you, there's going to be bits of him falling off by the end of the next issue.
You know what I really love about this is that they simultaneously bring in an element of the Clone Saga and bring in an element of the JMS run, and in one fell swoop, they take both of them sort of out of the picture.
Yeah.
They tease you with the Ezekiel spiders thing, and then, oh, no, it's not really Ezekiel. And then they bring Kane in, who's been, when was the last time he was seen?
He's been in a lot of this, actually. They've been kind of teasing him coming back for a long time.
But, you know, but not necessarily primary. And then they just, and then they off him, you know. He basically shows up to be sacrificed.
Well, Kane's been floating around for a little while here and there. I don't know if this is what they felt they were bringing him back for.
Yeah, but that's what
they've even got a major villain, which is totally based around wanting revenge against the Ben Reilly Spider-Man and confusing Peter for the Ben Reilly Spider-Man. Yeah, that's as much as the clone stuff has gotten involved in the Dan Slott stuff.
That was a bit shit, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. So now.
Definitely, that storyline was the hiccup in the otherwise quality run of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So.
He had a face like a bird, dinosaur.
He was like a dinosaur man or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, or something.
He was Raptor. Raptor was his name, wasn't it? Raptor. He's like a raptor or something. He had dinosaur DNA or something. Hell, I don't know.
So there you go. But, I mean, it was really an interesting issue. I mean, I found myself sort of really compelled, you know, especially getting into the end. And when, you know, and I was shocked at the places I should have been shocked. And then, you know, it was good stuff.
I would be shocked if the next issue it turns out that that's Peter Parker. That would be shocking.
I mean, again. Well, I mean, again, it was like, because you have that moment, you know, it's like, well, okay, duh, Spider-Man can't die, and then he gets shot, and you're like, holy shit, they just shot Spider-Man. Well,
oh, it's probably, okay, you know, don't get away.
Well, he could probably get away from that, and then he gets, like, hit and thrown, and then he gets kind of stabbed, and you're like, wow, how's he going to get out of this one? And then they, like, spear him and throw him up on that slab, and you're like... Oh, okay, well, he's going to get out of this.
I'll tell you how it's going to go. Kraven's going to feel sorry for killing him, for him dying, and he's going to put on the costume. And the next six issues, he's going to be Spider-Man. Boom!
Right.
Spider-Man cut could something be... with Mephisto, I imagine. And he's
or
dead
it could
and,
be Kane.
And all sorts of that.
Or I'm going to go with Kane.
Or that.
Right.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to go with a simple solution and say it's probably Kane.
It's probably his clone.
So, but wow. But yeah, and then, you know, again, the Mysterio reveal and Chameleon was brilliant.
That was good.
You just didn't see it coming. It's like normally, though, whenever some like really unexpected character turns up in the pages of Spider-Man, you probably go, "That's the Chameleon" or something. But you just—we've been deconditioned to think that over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and they even make a point to say that too. They even make the point that, you know, Spider-Man, you know, normally would sort of not been fazed by this. He would have normally said, "Oh, this is a trick. This can't be real." And he even makes the point to say, you know, I've seen crazy stuff. You know, I'm not inclined to not believe it. Which was probably a ruse in and of itself, because the assumption would be, as if it was Kane, that they had sniffed it out because they traded places. So
we won't find out till the next
issue. But we won't know until we get the next issue. So
is it next week, or is this skip
week? I think
week?
It's the week after, at least.
Damn it!
Yeah.
So, anyway, so there you go. Huge show this week. Lots of stuff. There was some good stuff this week.
Which is funny, because it wasn't like there was actually that much out this week. There's just a lot of good stuff out.
Yeah, just a lot of quality stuff to read. So, awesome. Well, that is our show. Again, I want to thank Melissa for your debut episode. Very good. Thank you. Good job. We're looking forward to having you here more often.
Yeah.
And again, go to the website. It's tfradio.net. You're going to find all of our shows there. Again, flagship show, Radio Free Cybertron. There's a bunch of stuff coming out from that because BotCon was this week. So if you are interested in Transformers stuff, you want to check that out. There is new Soundwave. That is, again, our general geek show. And we're going to be building up to some big stuff from there, and especially for this show as well, because Comic-Con is coming up. So both of those shows are going to be packed with good stuff, since we'll have both, I'm sure, movie news as well as comic book news coming up for that. But anyway, go to the website, check out all the good stuff for myself, for McFeely.
Follow us on Twitter.
Yes, follow us on Twitter.
EF Radio.
We all have Twitters, right?
We can that too.
I am the JD Church. Triplet, you are?
A man of the town.
Man of the town. That is great that you have that. McFeely?
Yeah, I'm almost as boring as yours, but just a little bit more, because I don't even have a V in front. It's just Chris McFeely.
Excellent. And then, Melissa, yours is?
Mine's MC Bernie.
MC Bernie. And, of course, you also want to follow TF Radio, because that is the main tweet line for all of the stuff, all of our shows.
See when the show goes up.
See when the show goes up, or when there is news as well. So, anyway, again, thank you for joining us, and we will catch you next time when it will be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.